Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Giustina. Joining us this week, back again, New York State Assembly Member Deborah Glick, a Democrat who represents New York's 66th Assembly District in Manhattan. That includes Greenwich Village. Welcome back, Assembly Member Deborah Glick.
Thank you so much for having me, David.
I know that one of your passions, one of your major issues, is the environment. And of course, you can't talk about the environment today without talking about climate change. And as chair of the Committee on Environmental Conservation, I'm wondering your thoughts this morning. We're watching a second devastating hurricane that is still battering Florida as we speak on a Thursday. We still don't know the extent of the damage. Just one more sign that our infrastructure needs to be taken care of. We need to be thinking foremost about the climate and what we can do, especially in New York State, to help us deal with it. And I know you've had a number of pieces of legislation you've been in support of. But in general, your thoughts as we watch what's happening in the South?
Well, of course, we are concerned. Many of us in New York State have experienced Superstorm Sandy or major flooding in upstate communities. So we know firsthand how difficult the recovery is. There are literally millions of Floridians without power, and depending on how the infrastructure is devastated, it's not always a quick fix of just, you know, putting up one line. You may have to rebuild substations and the like. So people in Florida are going to face a real challenge, and they are coming out of, in the northern part of Florida and into North Carolina, Helene. They haven't recovered from the first storm. So this is really quite catastrophic, and I know that the governor sent both Air National Guard and National Guard troops from New York with specialized equipment to try to help in rescue or recovery and rebuild. So we have to make a real clear decision that, we still have one of the major presidential candidates saying climate change is a hoax, sea level is going to rise an eighth of an inch over the next 300 years, you'll have a little more beachfront property, isn't that great? Basically, that is the lunatic fringe, and sadly, it is a major presidential candidate. So we have to raise people's consciousness, continue to do that, continue to fight back against climate deniers.
Not to mention, by the way, excuse me for interrupting, Assemblymember Glick, but this information they're spreading about the hurricane, that the money's going to illegal immigrants, and that literally the Democrats, Marjorie Taylor Greene said this, can control the weather. Don't think that they can't.
Well, aside from the fact that, as I say, there is a lunatic fringe, there is also not just irresponsibility, but cynicism.
Yeah.
And they see a political gain in developing distrust of government. That is, you know, your listeners will have to forgive me, but there is a fascist playbook that goes back to Stalin and Hitler and Mussolini and others, where you don't trust institutions, you don't trust the media, you don't trust, and you have to look out for your, you know, look over the shoulder of your neighbors, and you should report people who have certain views. These are pernicious political, cynical political activities that are undermining our communities, people's faith in health information. Everybody's talked about Project 2025. From an environmental point of view, they want to privatize NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which gives us information, accurate information about our weather and storm warnings. So it's, on the one hand, a little bit shocking. On the other hand, we have an opportunity to raise people's awareness. People first start paying attention after Labor Day, and people are now engaged in paying attention to the election. And these activities should raise people's ire about how incredibly divisive, destructive, and cynical these actions are.
You know, Assemblymember Glick, our guest on the Capital Connection this week, I was talking to my SUNY students about how, you know, you really do have influence if you call up your legislator. First, if you know who your legislator is. But second, if you call up the office or send a letter or an email and let them know how you feel about something. You know, a lot of people don't pay attention or just don't take the time to do that. But when you do, legislators do pay attention.
There's no question, and sort of a rule of thumb, if somebody sends you an email on a subject, you assume that there are some number of other people who haven't taken that action but still feel that way. So it's important for communication in both directions. Legislators should be communicating with their constituents. But, you know, we have a great many different types of problems that are all about climate. So whether it's about forever chemicals in our water supply, it is in our personal care products, in our so many of the general materials that we use every day. That is a problem. It became very visible during the Hoosick Falls crisis. But we also have to make a change and use more sustainable energy sources. We have to ensure that we're thinking about in our everyday lives, not to be a disposable environment anymore. You can't just use things once and throw them away. When I grew up, we didn't necessarily have paper towels. We had rags, which you could use and wash, or if they were completely, you know, used on something that was should not be reused, you could throw it away.
I remember getting soda in glass bottles.
Oh, yeah. Milk products, you know, was delivered in glass. I understand that, you know, the industry said, oh, you know, that's breakable, it's heavy. This plastic stuff is great, but we can never get rid of it, which is why I have a packaging reduction and infrastructure, recycling infrastructure bill. And we're going to come back with that this
That's session, what I wanted to know. Are you going to pass it?
It's passed in the Senate. They'll have to pass it again, but we are going to get that across the finish line, as well as a bigger, better bottle bill. We have seen the proliferation of so many other products, sports drinks and teas and coffees in a multitude of different varieties, and that they have to go somewhere, and they wind up going into landfills because there's no return on them, and that's a problem. So, you know, we are, as I say, the disposable New York has got to shift our priorities and be more sustainable.
Absolutely. And I also think it's interesting that on, you know, you have to check what the number is on the underside of a lot of these plastic bottles and containers. And, you know, say we can recycle in my hometown, for example, you know, number one and number two or whatever the numbers are. And we use that to decide. But we need to come up with a plan to recycle it all, don't we?
Well, I think the reality is that we have to stop using most plastics except in very specialized medical devices, etc. Because most of your listeners may or may not know, if they've listened to Judith Eng, they know that really the only recyclable plastics are 1 and 2. The rest are the plastics industry putting one over on us. So we need to not allow and understand the plastics industry is an offshoot of the petroleum industry. And they are going to, as we use less fossil fuels, they are going to produce more plastic. And we cannot afford that. We have seen all of these stories now proliferating about microplastics and how they have invaded our bodies. And we don't know what the health implications of that is yet, but we can assume that it's not good because plastic is made of scores of different chemicals, and you wouldn't normally willingly ingest those, but you're doing it unwittingly because these microplastics and nanoplastics are in everything.
Yeah, in our bloodstreams. And the chemicals you're referring to are PFOA and PFAS, among others, obviously, when you referenced Hoosick Falls. You know, and then that's the question. Who pays for it? Does an industry have to pay? Because otherwise, one more thing you're going to hear the public say, well, how much more is it going to cost me now that they have to put it in some sort of environmental friendly package, right?
Well, the reality is that many companies are doing what they can to reduce and use recyclable material. Several years ago, when I bought a phone, it came in a cardboard outer shell with a plastic over cover. This year, it was all just cardboard, you know, that could be tossed into a recycling bin and can actually be recycled. Yeah. Paper is one of the products that is most recyclable. And so industry is already moving in that direction because they are finding out that it is not as expensive as they thought it would be, and the public is demanding it. Younger people understand that they want to live in a healthier planet. There is no other option. We live on Earth, and that's it. And they are demanding that their consumer goods are coming in packaging that is fully recyclable, and plastic, generally speaking, is not.
We are speaking with Assembly Member Deborah Glick, a Democrat who represents New York's 66th Assembly District. Now, let's continue on the environmental theme for just another moment. Then I want to move on to other things. But I want your reaction to the stalled now congestion pricing plan. Obviously, part of that reason to do this is environmental, as well as more walkable city and less pedestrian traffic problems and potential deaths. But the governor paused it. And there's supposed to be some sort of reintroduction, as I understand it. What's your sense of things? In the meantime, of course, the MTA has to make up the funding hole.
Well, let's just be clear. For New York City and the metropolitan area, which is Long Island and Westchester, it is vitally important for people to have their mass transit in good repair so that it is predictable and that it is efficient and that it runs according to the schedules that they have put out. But a lot of the expense is in things that people won't see, the signal system, which would allow more trains to run more frequently if the signals were updated. It's an old system in many instances. There have been some improvements. There's been an addition of another line going out to Long Island, which was helpful. But these are capital improvements that are vital, and they need the money. And the point of congestion pricing was to do two things. One, give money to the MTA in $1 billion a year so that it could be bonded, and that would allow for the improvements that are so important. But it also was to encourage people to shift from driving to being in using mass transit. now. My colleagues who represent areas like Rockland and further north in the Hudson Valley, they say we have either no or very limited service, and so it's penalizing us unfairly. The reality is it penalizes New York residents in my district and in all over the core of Manhattan and Brooklyn by having an excessive amount of vehicles. There may be some things that you can't help. You're not going to get a refrigerator delivered on a cargo bike. There may be things that need to be, trucks may need to be used, but we want to ensure that we can fund our mass transit system, which is our circulatory system, and with it, reduce air pollution.
Well, let's turn to, obviously, the big story coming up in a couple of weeks, and that's going to be the elections. And rather than talk about any specific races, I'd like to talk about what's going to be on the back of the ballot for New Yorkers, Proposition 1 and the Equal Rights Amendment. Now, the proposed amendment would expand protection based on several new categories: ethnicity, disability, age, national origin, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity or expression, pregnancy or pregnancy outcomes, and reproductive health care and autonomy. This is from the Times Union. Some supporters of the ballot this year say it would codify those abortion laws in state constitution, while many opponents claim it would allow children to undergo surgery without the knowledge of their parents. Now, they say here, neither claim is true. Why? All the proposed amendment would do on paper is add those categories to four protections already in the state constitution since 1938. And don't forget, folks, turn your ballot over and vote on this. Where are you on this? I think I know.
Well, obviously, we want to be sure that everybody knows to flip their ballot over. This is Prop 1. In New York City, there will be additional propositions because the mayor, in an effort to forestall any attempt by the city council to put a question on the ballot, had the prerogative of putting his own. So in New York, it's more complicated. It's yes on one and no on everything else. But it is, as has been done in other states like Michigan, Kansas, Ohio, Kentucky, people believe that we need to ensure that we don't just have a statutory protection for some protected classes, but a state constitutional protection. And of course, people who are opposed to abortion, who are opposed to LGBTQ rights, are using scare tactics. I see the signs that say protect girls' sports. This is in no way going to have an impact one way or the other on that particular issue. And of course, being a lesbian myself, I remember the way in which my community has been demonized by opponents of liberty and freedom for decades.
And it's not just about New York, is it? In other words, LGBTQAI plus community, is it all over America? And
absolutely.
And it's not
absolutely
just about New York.
But this particular measure would protect, add to our state constitution, protected rights, partly because in states across the country, they are concerned that there is an effort on the hard right and the religious right to eliminate basic rights of personal choices, from living your life openly, making a health care decision that could save your life or protect your reproductive capacity. And they want to be sure that in their state constitution, they have those protections enshrined. And that's why we're fully supportive of Prop 1. It is the Equal Rights Amendment, and people should be thinking about it as equal rights, not special rights, which is what the other side always tries to say. They're looking for special rights. No, we're looking for everybody to have the same equality.
I agree. Well, another issue, and we have to do a little more rapid fire because we're running out of time quickly, but this year in the election, there is going to be voting on college campuses. A law that was passed has made an assignment for colleges to have polling sites on them. The local boards of election are supposed to work that out. The deadline deadline for the November election to have that done was March 15th, but a new report out from NYPIRG suggests that 24-year college campuses with 1,000 or more students and on-campus housing are still more than a mile from their nearest polling place. They're not obeying the law. They had since March to set up these polling sites and were behind on this?
Well, in some communities, they are suspicious of, you know, there's a town and gown split, and many communities, which is the local Board of Election, it has dragged their feet because they really don't want students to have ready access to a polling site. And as you know, in many campuses or in rural communities, there is no mass transit. Some of these roads are really not safe to walk along. And so that's why the law was passed. And it is, I guess, up to the state board to ensure that local boards are following the law.
Is there any punishment or fine? Or, I mean, what's there to get them to do it?
Well, I am not aware of any specific fine that would ensue, but I believe that individuals could bring a case in their local courts that they are being denied access to the ballot.
Thank you for that. Well, now I want to get to something that obviously I can't avoid. You are a representative assembly member from Manhattan. You've got an embattled New York City mayor, Eric Adams, now. A lot of people have called for his resignation. He says he's staying in sort of the innocent until proven guilty argument. We also are seeing reports. I saw one in the Times that former governor Andrew Cuomo is looking to potentially run for that seat. In the same report, that perhaps Tish James, the attorney general, would run if Andrew Cuomo ran, remembering she was the one who did the investigation that caused him to resign from office. So what's your sort of response to what's going on down in the city?
Well, obviously, the turmoil at City Hall is beyond distressing. You know, there are literally thousands and thousands of city employees who are going to continue to do their job. The garbage will be picked up. The phones will be answered. Paperwork will be processed and the like. So, you know, the everyday functioning is not the oversight of the mayor usually. A friend of mine once said about the Ronald Reagan, it proves that the country can just go along fine without a president. But I will say that it is deeply disturbing. The allegations are serious, and the circle of people around the inner core of the mayor have had questionable backgrounds to begin with, as has the mayor. I was not a supporter of the mayor because of that. So this isn't a shock in some ways, but it's very distressing. I don't know what the shakeout will be. I know that the former governor has been looking for some way to get back into public life. I think he wouldn't run against Eric Adams, but now that Adams is damaged and should resign, it gives him an opening. And if there is a special election, regardless of whether it's that the mayor resigns or the case moves quickly and he is removed, that's a special election and it's open. It is nonpartisan. A special election is just, and I think in that instance, it would be very hard to see that somebody with the name recognition of Cuomo wouldn't have a leg up.
Well, finally, just a minute, but I want your reaction to the New York State Supreme Court justice striking down the state's even-year election law. This is something the Democrats wanted.
Well, you know, I don't know that it was a universal embrace of that measure. I think there were people who were supportive and opposed on both sides of the aisle. But clearly, it was passed by Democratic majorities and signed by the governor. And it was a Republican judge that struck it down. So I think that the complication of having races every other year, and in fact every year, is costly. And so trying to make it easier for the public to vote in larger numbers by not having to be voting at different times, making the public feel like, didn't I just vote? What is this election about?
Yeah.
I think that was the desire to try to increase turnout by not having election fatigue on the part of the public. So I believe it was the right thing to do. I think striking it down is the wrong thing to do. But I believe there is an appeal going forward.
Indeed. I can't thank you enough. We are out of time. Our guest has been New York State Assemblymember Deborah Glick, a Democrat. Deborah, thank you so much for joining us. You're one of the legislators who keeps coming back to talk to us, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate that.
I just have to say that WAMC is one of those bright lights in media that provides a wide range of access to information to its listeners. And so I thank you and everyone at WAMC for the terrific work you do.
Thank you.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.